welcome to episode 21 of the Power On Retro Gaming Podcast. I'm joined by the handheld veteran Scott, and I'm James, and we are here to talk about video games.
That's right. That's a bit of a tongue twister, but we most certainly are ready to talk about some games, James.
Yes, we are.
Okay, so why don't we start off like we do every week, and you tell us what you've been playing this last week.
Yeah, no worries. The last few days, I've been playing Zelda A Link to the Past, and I beat that. Ganon's Tower and Ganon is a real pain in the ass on it. Just every time you... It's like a labyrinth. If you played it, which I believe you have on the last podcast, it's just one big maze, and every corridor takes you back to a certain point after you've completed it. That way you get the next key. But once you continue up the tower, you've got to face like bosses that you've already beaten in the game. I know you've got more powerful weapons, so it's a bit easier to beat them. But as you continue, they get harder. If you get knocked off when you're fighting Ganon, climb parts of the tower again. And it's just very frustrating. But once you do it, it's like a satisfying feeling. But we ended up beating him, so that was good. I haven't played that game in a long time, to be honest with you. So it was good to play it again. Like, I did remember where some of the secrets were, how to do this, how to do that. But like, most of it was just mostly exploring, which is what Zelda is about.
That's right. I think it's interesting to how at the end you verse previous bosses that you fought throughout the game, because that seems to be a staple of a few of the Zelda games going forward, even as recent as Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's good that you knocked that over. I did notice that you've been playing quite a bit of the Switch, the Super Nintendo online feature, which has that game on it. But you're right, I did beat it on the Game Boy Advance. I played it on the television, though, through the Game Boy GameCube adapter thing.
That's good.
Yeah, so, and I remember at the end, it shows up, I think, how many times you saved or how many times you died or something like that. Does that happen on the Super Nintendo version or only the Game Boy Advance version?
Don't think it did. Or to be honest, I did not watch, like, all, you know, like, the afterwards thing.
Yeah.
I just let scroll on while I was watching something on the TV in the background because I was playing it on the Switch.
Yes, okay. Oh, cool. Well, that's a pretty good achievement, man. It's a very good game.
It is a very good game. It's something that I would like to play again, but it's going to be way down the...
Well, you know, there's plenty of other games to play, but at least you can say you've knocked that one over.
Yeah.
That's one of the many games that I have boxed for the Super Nintendo, now that I think about it.
You've got a boxing complete?
Yeah.
Manual. Oh, that's good. So I've only just got the cartridge.
Oh, jeez. Well, that's why I'm far superior. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, anything else you've been playing at the moment?
Yeah, besides that, I picked up Doom Eternal the other day, and I've been playing through that as much as I can. Actually, really fun game. It's full on. It's very much like the 2016 version.
Yes.
It's just a better graphics and a bit more action, I suppose. But working through that, so it's a good game. I can't really tell you a whole lot about it because I haven't played too much into it, but I'm enjoying it so far.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you've been excited for that in a previous episode that you've been excited for that to come out.
Yeah, no, it's good.
That's very good. Happy with it. I think that coincided with what I was talking about, waiting for Animal Crossing to come out on the Switch, which I got earlier this week and have been playing probably 3 or 4 hours into it, not too much. Obviously, if you're familiar with Animal Crossing, which I'm sure you're not, it's not really the game that you pick up to play a game. It's more of a time-passing game. I don't know if that makes sense, but I guess if you've played it...
It does.
Yeah, you sort of pick it up just to sort of relax and do little minor tasks and build relationships and cruise around.
It's definitely that sort of game. Just from what I'm hearing from people, it's not a game that I've picked up ever and ever played. It's not my sort of thing.
Yeah, it's world-building game. More sort of simulation of life, I guess you call it in some way. But I've been playing a little bit of that. Prior to this episode, because we're on sort of house quarantine in Australia, I've been playing a lot of Tokaiden Age of Demons on the PS Vita this morning. Probably about 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. How'd that go?
It's good. It's a lot like Monster Hunter, I'm really made too much of a dint, and now I'm only up to the second chapter, but it seems like I've been playing it forever. I also completed Breath of the Wild on the Switch.
That's a huge achievement for you.
Yeah, so long time coming. That was first game on the Switch. Barely played it at the start, just had a lot of trouble getting used to it and getting into it. But then sort of, I guess overnight, one afternoon, I just sort of, beat two of the Divine Beasts, and then I had a go at the last boss. And I had been told the last boss was fairly easy, but I didn't expect it to be that easy, and I ended up beating it, which was good. And can say it was a great game. A friend of mine, Eric, is getting into the Switch, and highly recommended it to him. So hopefully he picks it up, then we can talk about it.
That's good.
But I know you haven't picked it up yet. You've got it for the Wii U.
No, I've got it on both consoles, the Wii U and the Switch, and I still haven't played it.
Yeah, it's out there next to your Lamborghini in the garage.
Exactly.
I put in Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Ah, yes.
Just to get that sort of started. I'll tell you what, though, putting that in and playing for the first hour through it really reminded me of when I used to play it. I can't remember the ones, Sacred Stones on DS, I think it was. Yep. Really reminded me of the frustration I had with that game, because sometimes so difficult. And I just played the first hour and I thought to myself, oh, do I really want to go down this road again? You know, just games that are just, you know, you get so far into them and they just become so difficult. But I think there's a lot of elements put in place in this game to really help you along.
It's a tactical strategy game.
That's right. And I think what they've done is they've now given it sort of easy, average or hard mode, but also there's assistance there if you can't beat certain things. Like in previous installments, if you lost a character, he was gone forever. In this, I think they've made it so he comes back at the end of the level.
You've got the option. I'm not sure about Three Houses, but with the one I played on the 3DS, you could either choose to do where they're gone forever, or you could choose for they come back stage.
That was one of the options when we started the game. When I started the game, you can choose whether they come back or not. But I chose to have them come back because I feel that it's, you know, you're building up sort of interest in the game and the characters, and you just don't want to see them disappear.
I agree. Like when I played the one on 3DS, I think it was can't remember the title, but I didn't want to lose the characters either.
Yeah, so, yeah, I've been playing a little bit of that. I've also, our TV blew up yesterday, so it's really just handhelds at the moment till I get that sorted out. But the Wii U, I've been playing Paper Mario 64 on that as well.
How are you finding that?
Yeah, it's good. Like, because obviously I haven't completed any of the Paper Marios, but I've played, you know, the one on the Wii U, which I really love, and the one on the 3DS. And it is, you know, you can tell it is the first, obviously it's the first one in the series, so there's a lot of elements that are still present, but obviously they're in their infancy in that game, and they've been developed for the other games, so it's almost like taking a step back in time, which is exactly what it is. But for me, it's just a little bit of an adjustment, but it is cool to go back and play it. It's good to sort of have. I'm finding now I've got sort of one retro game going on the side, as well as a couple of current games.
Yep.
That I'm playing.
That's a game that I've got and I want to play as well.
Now that I think they're shutting down a lot of jobs and things like that and saying stay inside, obviously you can get around to a bit more, but obviously it's important to spend time with your family as well and not get too heavily involved in the games, and try and do a bit of both if you can, a bit of balance. So those are the sort of the main ones I'm going through at the moment. I was playing Devil May Cry, the reboot, on the Xbox One shortly before the TV went down. It's more of just a hack and slash game. I wasn't too interested in the story. I sort of just had it in there at one stage and just started playing it. Until that's rectified, I can't tell you any more about it.
Yeah, no worries.
But anyway, so let's get on to the next topic, which is games we've picked up this week. I know it might be a little bit of a quick segment, this one, but have you picked up anything in the last week?
Besides Doom on the PS4, I actually grabbed Beautiful Joe 2 on the GameCube. That came in the mail. I haven't played it yet, but after us talking about it on a couple of podcasts ago, got me interested in wanting to give that a crack.
Maybe I should be I should go into advertisement, because it seems every time I do a review of a series, you go out and buy the game for it.
It seems to be working for you.
Yeah.
I also picked up Billy Hatcher on the GameCube as well. Got that actually really cheap, and it was complete. I've been looking for the complete copy for a while now, and got it actually very cheap, so I was pretty happy.
I'm not familiar with that game, Billy Hatcher.
Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg. It's a Sega game. It was only released on the GameCube. Billy Hatcher is featured on those Sonic Racing games as well. So maybe you've seen him as a character?
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure I'd know him if I saw it, or at least recognize the character.
Yeah. I mentioned the game on the Facebook page a while ago, but it's a game that has gotten... It's probably one of those underrated gems, I'd say, for the GameCube.
Yes.
But recently got the GameCube set up in the bedroom, so... Well, we just got to plug it in, but I want to fire that up after Doom. Or it's either going to be maybe Metroid as well, because after we were talking about it on the podcast, so I actually want to finish it.
Well, it's funny you say Metroid, because in terms of picking up games, I obviously got Animal Crossing. I ordered Final Fantasy 7 Remake, but I haven't really... I think I mentioned I got Dying Light, but that was the only game I sort of got this week, was the Metroid trilogy on the Wii U from the game store. To play through, but I don't have a Wii U Pro controller, and you need it to play it, and you also can't play it on the handheld screen, you have to play it on the screen, so that'll
really
have to wait until we get a TV sort of again.
Yeah 100%.
Well, it's okay for the PlayStation 4, because I can just stream it on the PS Vita, but the Xbox One, you need to have a Microsoft phone, which I don't have.
Yep.
So you can't sort of just look it over to that, which is upsetting. But anyway, so that's about it for my pickups this week. If you didn't get anything else, so you don't have your eye on anything going forward.
Nah, that's it. With money being tight at the moment, that will be it for a while with what's going on in the world.
Unless I do a good review, and then you can go and buy that game.
Yeah, you never know.
No, I'm pretty sure I actually know you've got this game that I'm going to talk about later. So anyway... All right, so let's get on to the theme of this episode. We actually have a bit of a different sort of episode today, where we're going to be talking about a Nintendo 64 game by the name of Banjo-Kazooie, which we both have played, owned, and love. And we've got a special guest coming on, a good friend of ours, Jono, who is going to share with us some memories he has of the game as well. So let's welcome Jono.
Let's welcome Jono.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries, Jono. How are you?
Pleasure to have you.
I'm very well in this coronavirus world. I'm doing okay.
You're in lockdown like the rest of us, so.
Yeah, good gaming time.
But you know what they say about the lockdown? They say to do as many episodes of your retro gaming podcast as you can. So that's what we're doing, and we're sticking to what the government's put in place, which is to do our podcast. Isn't that right, Papo?
That is correct. We've got to stay at home and work on the retro gaming podcast and play some video games.
Anyway, so we're going to get into the theme of this episode, which is talking about one of our favorite games amongst us is Banjo-Kazooie on the Nintendo 64. I know each of us has owned it, and we've definitely all played it together at some point. So maybe, James, you want to start us off just talking about, you know, your memories of the game, what you found to be enjoyable about it, and also just some special comments about it in general.
Well, we're gonna start. It's one of my favorite games of all time. The characters are just very lovable. The music in the game is amazing. The way the overworld is set out in this game, from when you start off, just finding out like your main story that Gruntilda has taken Banjo's sister up to a lair to steal her beauty, because Gruntilda's an ugly witch, and Banjo's sister is one of the best looking characters in the land, so she wants to steal her essence pretty much. So you're out to go pretty much rescue her, And you start off in the overworld and you're at Mumbo's Mountain, which you pretty much start off just learning the basic moves of the game that's going to get you far. And just how that's all played out, it's great. Some of the bits in once you meet the mole who teaches you everything, if you end up going back to your own house, you pretty much just met the mole, but yet you have a photo with him up on the wall, and that's just hilarious to me.
Yeah, I think the one of the things about it is the humor that's built into the game, with just the way the characters interact, even if they're obviously Kazooie is a lot more direct and stern in his or her comments. But, you know, as you progress, you know, you fight different enemies and they sort of have this banter back and forward, but it's almost like they don't really dislike each other. It's just the way they are. And it's very humorous to read the text. I mean, even the shark, when it's chasing after you, is like sort of saying sort of funny things. So I really enjoy that sort of aspect of it.
The humor is fantastic in it. As I'm going to mention in a game in one of my reviews, it's just the humor and that ties it all in. This game has so much humor in Banjo-Kazooie. It's fantastic to play. It's just a joy to play.
Yeah. Oh, good. And Jono, you mentioned before you came on the show that you owned this on your 64 originally when it came out. Do you have any memories around that you want to share?
Yeah, I was one of those kids that when I got my 64, I think I tried to purchase every available game I could and then probably only play them for 5 minutes at a time. But now Banjo was one of those games that I probably played more than any other game from what I can remember. I just really enjoyed, I guess, how it is split into kind of those open, like those levels within levels. And the different kinds of challenges, although back then I thought they were kind of hard, they're probably not as hard as I would remember, but it was really, really good game. I felt probably one of the better open world games at the time, I'd imagine.
It was very unique in its style. The way it was set out was sort of different to anything we'd sort of, apart from sort of Mario 64, I guess it was, if you hadn't played that, it would almost be the first game where you're sort of experiencing an overworld and then going into a level and then sort of finding levels within levels.
Yeah, it was very similar to Super Mario 64 where you got to collect like your puzzle pieces or get your star to go into or certain pictures in Mario 64. It's that element was there. But yeah. I thought that Banjo-Kazooie took it up a notch and did it so much better.
I think Banjo was a bit more creative with like within each level, how you were supposed to complete tasks and stuff.
Yeah,
that's right. And they did that by, like, especially in levels like Clicklock Woods, where you have to sort of complete certain tasks for different characters to move between worlds to actually activate certain things, and you could then do other things to gain, you know, additional jigsaw pieces.
And you also had seasons that you had to work with as well, which made it a bit more of a challenge. You really had to think about which way you had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And even, yeah, the different worlds, you know, like there's the snow level, you know, you've got Ancient Egypt. What else was there?
Yeah, Rusty Bucket Bay.
Clankers. Bay, Treasure Trove Cove.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
It is a good one. Level two.
Rusty Bucket Bay always used to. That's actually a pretty hard level.
It is hard, especially getting down to that one that's in the propellers of the ship.
Yeah,
jeez, still waking up in a cold sweat from that one.
But, and the oil in the water, it was just very difficult.
Yeah, well, that's just a real world problem. But yeah, I saw you. You messaged me the other day, Jono, saying that you were playing through it, and Papa and I sort of recently played it and completed it. But have you ever actually completed it yourself?
No. Didn't we? We tried it once, you and me, actually, Scotty. We went away for a weekend and we tried to clock it and get into the last sort of legs of it. It was bloody hard at the end. It's funny playing it again I managed to kind of get through the first four or five worlds within like almost a couple of hours. I just kind of remembered where everything was exactly.
Yeah.
But I do remember getting to the tail end of the game. It does get a lot harder.
Well, that's the only issue I sort of have with it. Is like I can play through the game, no worries. But then when I get to the last boss, it's just way too hard. I just can't seem to get, like, because with obviously when you're doing that dive attack to attack Gratilda, is it? It's very like straight and accurate, and you've got to be spot on. But you've also got to account for her sort of moving as well. That's the trouble I've had with beating the last boss. I don't think I've actually completed the game myself, but I've been in the process, like with you, Path, where we completed it, but I wasn't actually the one who finished the boss.
Yeah.
I'm more of a get the notes sort of guy.
get everything, be 100% in every world,
yeah.
And move along.
Yeah, but it's...
When we completed it, like, a couple of years ago, we were, like, I think it was just a couple notes here and there that we had just missed, or maybe, like, one or two puzzle pieces along the way, but... We nearly like 100% of the game.
Yeah, well, it's been a game throughout my life where I've sat down with friends at some point and, you know, had a go at completing it 100%. So, you know, the first three levels, I can almost think in my head exactly where to go to get everything, whether it be the Jinzos, the notes, the extra honeycomb, whatever it might be. But yeah, it's just been something that I've picked up every couple of years or every year since it sort of came out, and now if it being on the Xbox, I've been able to revisit it as well.
Do you remember, Ian, like I think it was year 10, we all came to mine and we played it?
Yeah,
I do. I think you brought the little TV over as well. Jono, were you there? I believe you were.
I think it was Jono and Angus, and I brought a TV over and we played.
I think Macca was there as well.
Yeah, we played through it, and I think we had another game going on the other TV, but we tried to complete it then, but I don't know how it went down.
No, it didn't. We didn't get very far.
No, like it takes time. It's, you know, if you start a game in the afternoon, you're only going to really be, you know, a few of these levels will probably take you a good couple of hours to complete 100%. Yep. Yeah, we've definitely, I think we got it on release as well. And yeah, we absolutely loved it. Just the whole premise of the game, the characters. We also love rare games because obviously we had the Donkey Kong Country games on the Super Nintendo. So that's why we were drawn to it. But it was almost a sure thing. Anyone who played it really loved it. I've never met anyone who said they didn't like it.
Yeah.
I can't say the same about Banjo-Tooie. I haven't really haven't really played it that much to put it to memory. And even people who love the first one never really played the second one. I know Jono, at one stage, we got a copy of Banjo-Tooie off eBay.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we played it. But
I reckon we played like the first world or something, and we're like, this is just a bit weird because it felt a bit unfamiliar to us for some reason.
Yeah, you might as well just go back and play the first one. But a lot of people I know didn't really have any time for the second one, or because it came out in 2000, they were already sort of moved on from it.
It came out very late into the Nintendo 64's life cycle. Yeah. I think you're moving into other consoles, or might have just moving on in general with another game.
Or the opposite sex.
Yeah.
Probably played banjo that much. You just all banjoed out.
Well, that's it. You know, it's time to upgrade to a proper guitar.
I have actually been looking for copies of Banjo-Tooie on 64 through Marketplace and eBay and stuff. They go for about $80 minimum at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably better off. I don't know if you still have your 360. Probably not, but getting the rare replay or just downloading it on the store. I know it's exclusive to the Microsoft game, the Xbox, but you know, it'd be nice if it came to the PlayStation 4, but I doubt that'll ever happen.
No, I doubt it.
Yeah.
It's bigger chance for it to come to the Switch, to be honest with you. It's rare, Microsoft and Nintendo have been working together.
That's true, with Banjo showing up in Super Smash Brothers, which, you know, we've speculated on this show since 2016 where he was going to show up next, and you know, then he showed up last year, in Super Smash Bros. It was quite surprising.
Yeah, there you go.
But the thing that annoyed me the most about Banjo-Tooie is they changed the sound effect for when he jumps. Does anyone recall? Like, nah. You know how it makes that certain noise in the first one where he's like, ooh, ooh. They changed that. They changed it. And that just annoyed me so much that I was like, screw this.
I haven't picked up on it. I don't think I played it enough, to be honest with you. I've always stuck with Banjo. Like, I do have the card for Tooie, but never actually really sat down and played it.
Yeah, I reckon we had that for a very, very short time because I remember getting it. We had it for a week or so, and then we sold it to get something else. I think it might have been a PlayStation.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. Did you own Banjo-Tooie at the time, Jono?
Nah, I don't think so. As you said, by 2000, I was probably onto the PS1 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how it all comes together, isn't it? Yeah, so, I mean, anything else you guys can remember specifically about the game that you'd like to share?
I'm going to just say, Jono, what was your favorite world in out of all the game?
Oh, that's a good one. I reckon it changes every time I play the game, to be fair. I actually kind of like, what's it called? I'm going to have to remember it. I do like Mad Monster Mansion, to tell you the truth.
That's a good level.
And
that's probably my most hated.
Clockwood was always a favourite of mine as well, but it is a bit hard in a few of the tasks, so it would annoy me at the best of times.
All right, there's Mumbo's Mountain, there's Treasure Trove Cove, Clanker's Cavern, Bubble Glomp Swamp, Freezy Peak, Gobi's Valley, Mad Monster Mansion, Rusty Bucket Bay, and Click Clock Wood.
Yeah, see, I really like Treasure Trove Cove because it was very bright and colourful, and I like the lobster or the hermit crab that you're sort of fighting it.
And then you've got to go inside and work out his puzzle?
Yeah, but no, I don't think that's... I think you just go in there and there's a jigsaw in there. I think you're thinking of that underground sandcastle thing.
There is that one, but yeah, with the giant crab or whatever it is, you've got to smash on his claws and then you go inside and just get his thing. But yeah, the other one, it is the puzzle.
That's not the one either.
No?
This is the one where he like swings his arms at you and you have to peck him in the eye. You're thinking of is it Gobi's Valley? Where you slam onto the paws of the Sphinx and he opens
I know that one too. There's similar little puzzles.
Bubblegum Swamp.
Yeah. You do it on the turtle and you go in and you do the musical remembrance.
Right. Oh, that's a pain in the ass, that one.
Yeah. See, it sort of goes Mumbo's Mountain, Treasure Trove, well, it does go. And then you've got sort of two levels where it's very dark and depressing with Clanker's Cavern, which is a deformed shark who is a robot, half a robot, half shark, cyborg, if you will, who's chained up. And then you've got a swampy level, which is, you know, all sorts of like little crocodiles running around and turtles making songs and things going on.
I think the reason why I like Mad Monster Mansion is because there's Loggo the toilet. You know, the toilet that you go into.
Yes.
Yes, they're not shy about the adult humor hidden away in there, that's for sure. But for me it's Treasure Trove Cove would be my favorite, and probably Gobi's Valley. Sorry, yeah, that's probably my least liked level. Go on.
I was going to say my favorite might be it's either Treasure Trove Cove, just because it's simple and I know where everything is, but the ultimate favorite is Freezy Peak, just because of I hate the snowmen who throw the snowballs at you all the time, so you always got to constantly dodge those, but just the lights in the level, just the atmosphere, the music in it. The little race between is it seals or walrus? You've got to get the special boots to speed up because you can't beat him just by yourself if you're hopping on Kazooie's legs. It's just a really fun level. It just it all just works really well, and the whole Christmas theme is quite nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, my hated one is Rusty Bucket Bay, just because it is very difficult. You have to be very careful with everything you do. You fall in the water, you're clearly in the oil, and you start, your health starts diminishing. Yeah, even difficult
the music
level.
In that level. Even the music in that level makes it depressing.
Oh, big time, big time.
Yeah, it is a very depressing level. It's not what I look forward to playing when we are trying to complete it.
Yeah, but once you've done it, you've done it, and then it's off to Clicklock Woods.
Yeah, that's a bit of a – that one's a bit of a time soaker. You know, going up the top and popping and bopping. So, yeah, that was a good level, though. You can transform into a bee and fly around, which is really cool mechanic. Really cool game.
Back in the day, with the reviews, like IGN gave it a 9.6, GameSpot gave it a 9.5. It's got pretty much 90s or 90% over ranking, so it did really well back then as well.
Yeah.
It's, as mentioned, it's one of my favorite games of all time. Just the characters in it, it's funny. The gameplay is awesome. The worlds are great. It's very different throughout.
Yeah.
And yeah, like my favorite part of the game is probably the board game that you have to play at the end to reach Gruntilda.
Yes.
Where you gotta, it's like a memory game, and it's like a chance game as well. It's just so well done.
Yeah, there is a lot of different elements to it, isn't there? Because you really need to be paying attention throughout the game to answer some of those questions.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, they display a photo of something in a level that you need to answer which level it's from, or one of the riddles.
It's a very vague photo as well, but then you just look and you're like, oh, I do remember this. It was Clicklock Woods or whatever was in that far corner that I saw. I was getting attacked by, like, those bees.
Yes, those bees. Yeah, well, there you go. Out of 10, what would you say, boys?
Oh, it's one of my favorite games. I'm going to give it a 10.
Yeah, I'd give it a 10 too. What about you?
I'd probably give it a
9.5.
Okay.
Just a bit different.
Rusty Bucket Bay's really taken its toll on him over the years. Yeah.
Ask me again in a couple of weeks when I hopefully finish it again.
Well, he's going,
please do.
Yeah, you'll have to come back on and tell us how you go.
Yeah.
But we should all make an effort to sort of try and play Banjo-Tooie so we can possibly get together in a year's time and talk about that.
Yeah, it would be good. It's something that I really should beat since I love the first one. It's a bigger game from what I'm aware of. Yeah, something I should get around to doing.
Jono, have you had any interest or knowledge of Yooka-Laylee, the game on the PlayStation or Xbox?
Yooka-Laylee? Can't say I've heard of it.
Okay. Well, it's basically the guy who designed this game, one of the artists, Steve Males, made a game called Yooka-Laylee in 2017. It's on PlayStation. Have a look into it, because it's a spiritual successor.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to research it.
You sound like one of my parents back in the day when I was like, oh, look at this, Mum, on the game. Oh, that's nice.
I was typing in Yooka-Laylee, like the instrument, not the way.
Yeah, well, okay. It's just like Banjo-Kazooie, and then they've obviously gone with the music style again. But
this is cool.
It's essentially a rip-off of the Banjo-Kazooie, but it's pretty cool.
But it's on PS4, at least.
Yeah, we can download.
It is. It's easy to access these days. It's not that expensive.
Yeah, so you can download that and talk about it on your new podcast, which is coming out. Do you want to plug that while you're here?
Oh, if you want. I got a new podcast coming out. It's called What the Heck. Hopefully you're going to re-release it in a couple of weeks. We've kind of been stunted for the start of it because of Corona. But see how we go.
And you just talk about strictly Sega Saturn on it, or
Sega consoles? Sega Saturn, Dreamcast,
Yeah, cool. you're a good guy. Yeah. Awesome.
Give it a listen, guys.
Yeah, where can we find it? YouTube?
It will be on all available hosting platforms. It's not up yet, but trailer's coming out in the next couple of days, and then first episode trailer. Probably next week, hopefully.
Wow. Oh,
beautiful.
Got to whet the appetite, you know.
Yeah, okay. That says it has some pretty good production value on it. It must be better than our show.
This is top five in top my five. iTunes, iPod, whatever.
Top five in all the shows you've been on.
Been on a couple.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, Jono, and talking about Banjo-Kazooie memories, and we look forward to having you again.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait to talk about Blast Corps soon.
Thanks, Jono.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, boys.
See ya. That was Jono. Thank you for coming on the show, Jono, and we look forward to having you again. Now, We'll get back to the main part of the show, where we will talk about gaming news. Have you got any news this week?
I do. We had the PS5 specs announced. There was a bit of chat about that, about what games will be able to be played on the PS5. They've also recently clarified that it's not going to be just the top 100 games. It's going to be a lot more than that. So the PS4 games are mostly backwards compatible. There might be some niche games that will not be. So that's pretty good. You don't want to have a PS4 and a PS5 setup. So that's pretty good. The speeds in it look pretty good. Not as good compared to the Xbox. But it's actually got a faster SSD card in it for your memory and your hard drive. So it's going to be real quick to load games. Like extremely quick, and they're actually introducing their own like virtual sound operating system that works with the TV. So I'm looking forward to what that's going to be like. I hear the audio is going to be really good on this.
Oh, good.
We also had Resident Evil 3 demo was released. I have not played it. I will wait for the actual release of that. I'm not one to spoil it by playing the demo anymore, like I did back in the 90s, I suppose. As we discussed, Doom and Animal Crossing was released on Friday.
Yes.
And Spawn, a character by Todd McFarlane that I quite like, was released on Mortal Kombat 11 as DLC. That's all I had on my end. What about you?
Yeah, well, I haven't really had much. I mean, you've covered most of the things I was going to bring up in terms of news. I was just looking at the Jill design this morning for Resident Evil 3, and a lot of people are upset by the way she looks, which is a bit strange. But I guess they've sort of swayed a little bit away from what the original concept look was for Jill Valentine in Resident Evil 3.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about Resident Evil 3 Remake, because I know it's not really a full game. So I'll be interested to see what they sort of pack in there to get it up to sort of a 10 plus hour game, because the original was only about a 3 or 4 hour game. It'll be interesting to see what they do. There's apparently been a heap of Mega Man Easter eggs placed throughout the game, so that would only lead one to assume that they have something coming by Mega Man to sort of boost popularity, perhaps.
First time I heard of that one.
Yeah, but that's really about it. I don't have a lot of news this week, unfortunately, for you.
That's all right.
Yeah, so maybe next week, but you've covered most of the important stuff about the PS5 and all those. I mean, there is a game called One Piece Pirate Warriors 4, which I'm excited for, but that's about it. That's coming out soon. I think it's on demo stage at the moment, so if you want to check that out if you're a fan of One Piece.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway. All right, well, that's it for the news. Now, let's get straight into our two reviews for the show.
Yep.
You could go first if you like.
I can. And the game that I am going to talk about is Ratchet and Clank Up Your Arsenal. Have you played any of the Ratchet and Clank series?
I have not. I think you may have reviewed Ratchet and Clank once before and you asked me if I've ever played them, and I still haven't. No.
I don't think I have. I think I've mentioned it, but I don't think I reviewed. Did I?
I think you was may. It? I think you have actually reviewed this one, but let's hear it again if we haven't.
Have I really?
Maybe, I'm not sure. I can't remember. I know you did something Ratchet and Clank or Jack and
Dexter. It was Jack and Dexter.
Banjo-Kazooie, who knows?
It was Jack and Dexter.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, so I'm like, I don't think I have.
All right, well, let's hear it. If it makes, if it sounds familiar, I'll let you know. Jack and Dexter, what's it on, the CDO? 3DO?
Jack and Dexter was on the PS2, but we're talking about Ratchet and Clank, and the game is Up Your Arsenal, and it is the third one in the series. Now, Ratchet & Clank is a 3D action platformer on the PS2, and it was developed by Insomniac Games, which you should know, and it was published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. Up Your Arsenal is a third-person action-adventure title with elements of shooting, role-playing, puzzle-solving, and vehicle driving, in which the player controls Ratchet, and he's a Lombax mechanic, with an arsenal of weapons and gadgets. And he carries his sidekick, Clank, as a backpack, very similar to Banjo-Kazooie, where he uses his helipack to pretty much fly Ratchet around. So when he's jumping over obstacles.
Cool.
It is the first in this series to feature both single and both multiplayer online and offline. And what this series is known for is its guns. And oh my, does this game deliver on its guns. Up Your Arsenal features a wide variety of weapons, both original and returning from previous games. In the single player, Ratchet can obtain 22 weapons, of which 5 return from Going Commando, which was the second one in the series, and 2 from the original. The game story is fantastic, it's funny, and the mini games are great. The Clank levels are fun, and I recommend this game to anyone. And I've actually got a fun fact for you, which I just found out about while researching this game. The PlayStation 2 disc contains a demo for Sly 2 Band of Thieves that can be accessed by holding down L1, L2, R1, R2, and pressing start on the main menu. And that will load up a demo of Sly 2, which I thought, yeah, it's a fun fact. And that's my review. When I played this game for the first time, I started the series on Going Commando, and after playing Up Your Arsenal, it just went to a whole nother level, and I absolutely love this game. I got one of my mates into the series as well from after playing this. I played every game in the series, going from the PS2 to the PS3 to the PS4, and I'm looking forward to another one. I haven't heard anything, but it's the guys who made like the Spider-Man game and so forth. Yeah, so same developers.
Was there a movie for Ratchet and Clank?
Yeah, there was, and that was what the PS4 game was based on as well.
Right. How would you do the movie?
The movie, not so good, but I didn't mind it for what it was, but the game was actually really fun. I believe it's one of the PS4 greatest hits as well. So if you haven't played Ratchet and Clank, I highly recommend any game in the series. Probably the first one is the weakest one in the series because they were just pretty much getting their front foot together.
Working it all out.
Yeah, working it all out. But I give this game actually another high review. It's probably a 9 out of 10 for me.
Ooh, geez, two big ones in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2.9. What was this release on the PlayStation 2?
Yeah, so this was the PlayStation 2. There was one game after this. It was called Gladiator. It was kind of a spin-off of the series. So there was 4 games on the PS2. I believe there was 3 games or 4 games on the PS3. And then there's been the one game on the PS4.
Right.
So it's a PlayStation exclusive, and that's what Insomniac Games are all about at the moment. And I believe Sony pretty much bought the rights for them as well. So they're stuck with Sony for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, well, that's I know you've been a big fan of that series. You've definitely spoken about it. Maybe that's why I was thinking that you'd already reviewed it, because you've spoken so much about it in the past to me.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Do you remember where you were when you got that game, the third one? Did you take the bus down to Video Boom, or any memories behind that?
I actually I think I picked it up at Big W in Eastland, but I do recall getting the first one because I was price matching. It was the first time I really shopped at EB Games. So I found out about their price match guarantee. Clearly, they were more expensive than the other retailers. And yes, there was a games place outside of Eastland where I can't remember what it's called now, but it was actually like a really small store. It was quite cool. You could hire games as well.
Oh, I remember the one down near the bus stops.
Yeah. And they had Ratchet and Clank 1 going for a certain price. And then I was shopping around at all the stores inside of Eastland. And I went to EB Games. And I'm like, oh, maybe they can beat the other game store. But they could only price match it. And I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered going back. I'll just get it here.
Yeah, I remember that store on the outside there where I think it's an underground car park now.
Yeah, it is.
It always had like all the boxes displayed around the outside. It had like DVDs and stuff. And it had a lot of anime stuff, which you could never find anywhere else.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a cool store.
It was a cool store. It's a shame that all those little niche stores, they're all gone now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's your fault.
It's my fault, is it?
Shouldn't have price matched. You should have just given them the money.
Bought it there, yeah.
Unfortunately, years later, from your selfishness, they developed into a massive shopping mall.
Oh, no, it's my fault.
People lost their jobs.
Oh, dear.
There you go. Oh, well, yeah, good review. Good stuff. Oh,
thank you. And let's hear your review.
Okay, well, I will stick to the trend of trying to get you to guess what it is before I tell you the title, which you seem to have forgotten. But anyway, this game is a side-scrolling racing, two names depending on which region you're in. Okay. Released in 1994, obviously 16-bit. It was released on the Super Nintendo. It features a one-wheeled, well, I'm going to say it, I'll give away the title, but a one-wheeled vehicle which performs tricks while racing. Any ideas?
One-wheeled. One-wheeled.
And believe it's a good friend of ours, Stefan's favorite Super Nintendo game.
Oh, yeah. Uni Races or Uni Rally, depending on where you're...
Yes, Uni Rally, which is the PowerVert title, which we both had, and Uni Racer, which is the rest of the world's title, which releases...
Or it's known as Unrally to Unrally. Stefan.
Yeah, so released in 94, 95. It's a similar game to Sonic, whereas you're constantly moving in every direction to complete. In this case, it's a race. So you use the control pad as your direction to move and B to jump to perform tricks.
Yeah.
Now, if you perform the tricks and land perfectly, which is seat up, wheel down, you're playing at home, you'll get a speed boost, but also the name of the stunt. It's interesting when playing this growing up and also with yourself, how much you don't seem to notice that there is a lot in this game in terms of mechanics and ability to, you know, progress in the race and get an advantage, judging by what's in the actual level, but also in the stunts. For example, there's a twist feature by pushing the A button, but using the Y button to do a jump will actually lead you to do a special stunt, which is a lot harder to land, but will give you a bigger speed boost. So this will take a lot of practice to master, but you can actually get the advantage if you can pull off those stunts. But obviously, once you pick this up and play it, you know, once every 5 years or not very frequently, you're just sort of mashing buttons and trying to fly around in the air, trying to land something, which...
As you would know from when we played it.
As you know. So now I mentioned that there is ways to sort of get the advantage. Well, that comes from basically the color of the track, whereas it's blues, reds, greens, yellows. It indicates what's coming up ahead. So that'll be, you know, either a jump or a hazard or the change of direction, something like that. So if you can memorize those, you know what's coming ahead, then you can sort of prepare for it. So there's 9 circuits with 5 tracks. Those color tracks and the indicators are good for when you're playing two-player, the split screen. So you can sort of try and get the advantage by that. But there is also 16 different colored unicycles which you can choose from, but none of them have any different speeds or anything. It's just basically color-coded, different looking bikes, but they're no different in speed.
That's correct. It's and, all about the way you race, the way that you trick. You just got to focus on the whole course itself at all times, or else you're in big trouble.
That's right. Now, like most Super Nintendo games around that era, it's got a sort of a rock and roll soundtrack, much similar to Rock and Roll Racing, just, you know, hard rock sort of tracks. The final boss in the game is called Anti-Uni, and he is almost impossible to defeat because he does special moves like slow down your speed or, you know, make hazards for you. I've never actually faced him, but
neither have I.
I watched a clip of someone attempting to beat him, and it was quite difficult. So, well, it looked to be quite difficult. Anyway, so much like your review, I've got a little bit of trivia myself. This game was designed, or actually produced by DMA Design, which went on to become Rockstar, which made games like GTA. Now, they're actually sued over this game by Pixar due to a copyright infringement over a short film called Red Dream, which featured a unicycle as well. And it resulted in a win to Pixar, which halted production of the cartridges and limited sales to 300,000. I know that doesn't sound like many, but worldwide. So that makes it one of the only Super Nintendo games where they know exactly how many cartridges there are worldwide. So if you think about that, that sort of made the game a little bit more uncommon. Now, I didn't actually own this. Oh, yeah, the family friends had it. That's where I got to play it, and we really enjoyed playing it there. And I think when we went away one year, it was actually, there was a Super Nintendo in the room where we stayed, and it was one of the games on that too.
Oh, that's great. So,
but yeah, as soon as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago when I started collecting, this is one of the ones I first got when I started getting some money. Did you own this game as a kid?
No, I didn't. I actually heard about it on one of the YouTube channels that I watch, and that's where I found out about it, and I ended up buying it on one of the Facebook groups, and a couple of years later, I forgot that I'd bought it, and I've bought it again, but yeah, so I've got two copies.
So it's the essential, it's really the Shaq Fu of your collection. You've got multiple copies building up.
Now I've only got one Shaq Fu, and that is all I will ever have of Shaq Fu.
Oh, well, only, what, 299,000
there
to get to all the year, right? Yeah, so. No, that's good. Yeah, so that's my review of that game. It's a just a pretty basic. It can be a basic racing game. What's unique about it is the change in directions, and, you know, obviously there is a mini map on the screen which you can sort of see which way you're supposed to be heading. But, you know, you do build up so much speed that it can almost be uncontrollable. I think when we played it last, when we got together at your joint, I think the issue we were having was you pick up so much speed that when a change in direction or a hazard does come along, you don't have time to prepare for it. That's sort of falls short, I think. But yeah, so I'll give this one probably a 7 out of 10. Although I really do enjoy it, it's not a spectacular game, but it's fun with, you know, friends and one friend who mispronounces the title, which we make fun as often as possible.
Yeah, I think it's a good multiplayer game. It's good with friends, yeah.
Yeah. So we just need to get the friends and we'll be all set.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the big step.
Anyway, well, speaking of one friend, Jono, thank you for coming on the show. And we hope to have, you know, more special guests going forward. But obviously, if you like to follow us on our Facebook page and our Instagram, it's Power On Retro Gaming. Also find us on iTunes. What is it? Wooshka,
Deezer. You can find it on Stitcher Smart Radio as well, and Spotify.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. Please subscribe and remember to power on.